ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Kirate Pandao Vita Bala Raja Vadhu Yushmat Vite Bahun Neshan Rapta Togavati Muhu Samstite Tirtate Pandao Vita Bala Prajavatu
Vita Bala Prajavatu
Yushmat Krite Bahun Kleshan
Yushmat Krite Bahun Kleshan
Prapta Toktavati Muhu
Prapta Toktavati Muhu
Samstite
Samstite
After the demise
Atirate
of the great general
Pandao
Pandu
Prita
Kunti
Bala Praja
having young children
Vadhu
my daughter-in-law
Yasmat
Krite
on your account
Bahun
multifarious
Leishan
afflictions
Prapta
underwent
Toktavati
in spite of having grown up boys
Muhu
constantly
Translation As far as my daughter-in-law Kunti is concerned Upon the great general Pandu's death, she became a widow with many children, and therefore she suffered greatly. And when you were grown up, she suffered a great deal also because of your actions. Purport. The sufferings of Kunti Devi are doubly lamented. She suffered greatly because of early widowhood and to get her minor children brought up in the royal family. And when her children were grown up, she continued to suffer because of her son's actions. So her sufferings continued. This means that she was destined to suffer by providence. And this one has to tolerate without being disturbed. So... The Pandavas have come here to meet Bhishma Dev to console their difficulties. They've won the war, they've been reinstated on the throne, but the difficulty is that there's still an anxiety. The idea was is when they were in the forest that all anxiety would go away, when they defeated Duryodhana and his brothers and were again reinstated on the throne. So this is a lesson for all of us to learn, is that we always have our idea that the situation is actually what makes us happy. But situation has absolutely nothing to do with what makes you happy. Right? It must be propagated. One would wonder why, but it's like this. The living entity is going to sit in the material world for a long time. Right? Lifetimes of Brahma. So that's... You can't count the numbers of years like this. I don't know. What's the biggest number? No, that's one lifetime of Brahma. What's an Arbuta or something? It's a... Huh? Pararta. And what is that? How many? 10 to the how many? 10 to the power of 18. So that's as big as the Vedas go. Because beyond that, it's incomprehensible. So now we have to sit here for a long time, and The problem is if we get bored, it's a big problem. Right? So Krishna then has to create a situation in which we can be busy. Because if we're not busy here, we're going to be busy making trouble in the spiritual world. Right? And we're here because we like to make trouble. So therefore, then Krishna arranges that we really have strong faith that our situations and the particular facilities we have, the particular securities we've arranged, that is actually going to make us happy. Right? If we didn't have that faith, what would we do here? Right? There'd be nothing to do here. Right? It would be like telling you, okay, here, see this nice tree here? Don't worry about the tree. Right? Okay. Now look in the water, right? Now you have this great tree in the water. Nice tree, no? Yeah. Okay, good tree. Yeah, see nice flowers, leaves, some fruits down there, way out there in the water, you know, it's about 12 feet deep there. But whatever, there's fruits out there. And all that. And so now you take that tree, and whatever you do with that tree, you'll be satisfied. It will give you all the happiness you require. It'll give you your protection. It'll give you everything. Right? And we're the idiots that buy it. Right? So there we are. We're out there, you know, up to our neck in water, trying to pick the fruits and flowers and, you know, like that. You know, they didn't bother telling us how to swim, but whatever. We're out there. We're trying our best, you know, making that, giving it the college try and all that. And those that don't, you know, that sit there on the bottom and lament that the delusion's on the top of the water, you know, then they're considered not so good. Like this. So life is going on in this way. So then the Pandavas, even though for so long they wanted to have sovereignty, and especially once they were thrown out of the kingdom and they were exiled in the forest, then the only thought was how to get back the kingdom. How to get back. How we are going to establish ourselves again. And for every conversation you hear them discuss, they're going to be happy. Right? That's their idea. But if you'll notice, Krishna says, you'll get back your kingdom. The sages come and say, don't worry, religion will prevail, you'll get back your kingdom. Everybody says, Indra says, you'll get back your kingdom. But if you go through carefully and check, not one of them said, you'll be happy. Right? No one said. Right? No one said. The Shastras say, you do this and, you know, you'll get result. Right? You do this, you'll get economic development, you'll get religious development, sense gratification, you'll get liberation. They tell you how to do it. They don't say you'll be happy. Right? The terms that they use for happiness are the hidden terms that if you use those things in Krishna's service, yes, then you'll be happy. But it's worded in such a way that it appears that the karmakanda will make you happy. Yeah, if you do this, then you'll go to that place that is deathless, right? So the heavenly planets are known as Amara. No one dies there, right? You die outside. Right? Common thing, right? We say, yes, this room is deathless. No one dies in this room. So as soon as someone starts to get a heart attack, we drag him out in the hall and let him die out there. Right? So then we can go on and say, yes, no one has ever died in this room. This room, anyone in it is deathless. Right? So that's what it is. So you just say that place where, you know, it is Amara, no death. So the karmakandis will take us to heavenly planets. The devotees know you perform your duties to please Krishna. That means you go back to Godhead. Right? The jnanis then will be, you go to that place you never come back from. Right? So they think they don't come back. They come back. But it means the spiritual world. Or we're in that place where it's free from all material misery. Right? So that's only the spiritual world. And the Brahman is free from it as long as you don't think about doing anything. As soon as you think about doing something, again, we come back. Does this make sense? So no one ever says you'd be happy here. Right? But the point is the jiva wants to be happy. And he only works because he's going to be happy. Otherwise he doesn't work. Right? Somebody said, no, I know somebody who always does things and makes themselves miserable. But if you check, that misery is their happiness. Believe it or not, some people love to be miserable because it gives a very full, intense experience that there's some meaning to their life. Yes, I'm the most miserable, right? I have some position. I have some status in society. No one else is as miserable as me. I'm special because I'm more miserable than you, right? You know, you can see some of that.
They get that their whole life story to others.
Yeah, yeah, you can tell the whole life story. Oh, you're always the center of attention because you're the, you know, what is it? How do you say it? Less miserable. Whatever. There's a movie about that. I mean, a play has been going on since I don't know how long. It is so popular, right? I think it's one of the longest playing theaters other than O Calcutta, right? Like that. That one also be around. How did anyone live in Calcutta, right? That went on for 11 years, right? But whatever, it's going on. Because people, you're miserable. You're the center of attention. You can think about yourself. You're special, right? You have some meaning in life because you're the most miserable. So, but that's their happiness. Because it's something complete, keeps the mind busy. Otherwise, one gets bored, right? Getting bored is not good. Very bad thing, right? So, happiness is what we're looking for. So then we have to put together that I do work, I get result. That result makes me happy, right? If we don't work on that principle, we'll go nuts. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it's been presented. Even in the Vedas it's presented that way. Because the conditioned soul will not think otherwise. Unless he's come in contact with Krishna consciousness, you cannot break this principle. Otherwise, you just have a bunch of people who do nothing and go crazy. Right? It's a common thing, right? You have somebody, it's a common thing. Somebody's going to die. They know they're going to die. It's terminal, right? So then they go out and do the craziest things. They don't care because they know they're going to die anyway, right? So you can imagine a whole universe full of people like that? Right? It would be tough because no one cares. So to keep law and order, then everybody has to, you know, fit into the mold that, yes, I do my work, I get the result, that result makes me happy. Then everybody works very nicely. And there's never been in history any occasion where someone didn't work for a result. Everybody works for a result. Right? Even in the spiritual world. But the difference is in the material world we work for our own result or a result for others that will make us happy. Like, I'm so happy, you know, it's like you give all the charity to all the poor kids, you go there to Biafra, you see them all there with the big grins on their face because the people taking care says, oh, this is the one that takes care, smile, so they all smile. Otherwise they wouldn't care. But whatever, they're smiling and you feel so good, yes, I'm helping them, I feel so good. Right? If you didn't feel good, not one cent would be going out of your pocket. Right? If you feel good, therefore the money's going. That's the reason. Right? We're not doing it for something else. Welfare is one way to make ourselves happy. Our own senses, we can make ourselves happy. Someone else's senses, we can make ourselves happy. Someone else's emotions, or that exchange of emotions, or getting out of here, I'm checking out of here, you know, I'm out of this movie, right? So it's just, we're going. So then, okay, all that, but it's all for ourselves. I want liberation. So dharma, artha, kama, moksha, it's all for making me happy, right? That's the thing. When number one is happy, then everything's okay. But in the spiritual world, they also work for result, but that result's Krishna's. Krishna's happiness is their happiness. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made this point once. They were at Radhakund and there was one very wealthy businessman from Calcutta. Very pious man, and he was doing Dandabat Parikram around Radhakund. And he pointed out to the devotees. He said, that man is worshipping Radharani to please Krishna. Like that. Because Radharani is very dear to Krishna, so to please Krishna, he is doing Dandabat Parikram around. Like that. He says, our method is different. We worship Krishna to please Radharani. Right? So, the principle is you're trying to please somebody, right? So then we see that this is the process. Gita is the bridge, right? It tells the concepts of what is going on. The Vedic literature tell you how to make this material world work. And you got to be really foolish to try any other method than the Vedic method to make it in this material world. You know, I say that confidently. Is that you got to be an idiot to try any other process. Because only the Vedas know how it works. No one else knows how it works. Other people, by observing the material energy, come to some idea or conclusions that are similar to what the Vedas is. Right? Lord Brahma makes the point, Krishna creates the material world exactly as the Vedic literature describes it. Right? Because we don't know Krishna, we know the Vedic literature. So he puts it that way. What he means is the Vedic literature describes it exactly as Krishna creates it. But to just give support to the Vedic literature, the literature is aparushaya, it's eternal. So Krishna, when he recreates the universe, he does it exactly the way it is in the Veda. So it's like the manual is made, and then they make the machine. So that's how it works. So you got to be foolish to think that there's some other method. Now, someone can observe, if they're very intelligent, very focused, have determination, and they can figure things out. Okay, when I drop, you know, when I sit under an apple tree, and then an apple, you know, gets ripe and it falls off the tree, it goes down. Right? And if my head happens to be in line underneath that apple, it lands on my head. And then, you know, then the force of the apple hitting on his head then creates an equal reaction of, you know, understanding, hey, you know, there's some law of physics going on here. Right? So apples were falling off the trees well before Newton figured it out that they fall off of trees, right? You know, you can go back, you know, and people, they always fell down, right? You go back and you read in the Iliad, right? When someone was killed, they fell down, right? It was always going on. It wasn't, you know, before Newton, the apples were going up and it was a big problem for the farmers having to catch all the apples. No, you know. It was that apples always fell down, right? Just someone after, you know, how do you say, basically nearly 5,000 years of Western existence, someone noticed it, right? Like that. So, you know, that's intelligent, right? It took 5,000 years, but they figured it out, right? But in the Vedas, it's already told. Anantasesha is there. He is gravity. So everything goes to him, right? Everything's connected to Krishna. It goes to Krishna. So that principle of things being connected or going to a spirit, that's gravity. That's anatta. That's always been going on. Right? But, you know, Newton gets the credit like that. Vedic literature is, you know, Newton 1 point, Vedic literature is zero. So, you know, whatever. It goes on. So that's the principle. Time, place, and circumstance means you apply it. It has to work. But it's still based on the same principles, because there aren't any other principles. Right? Modern can't say what the principle is. They can say what the detail is, but the principle they can't say. They don't know. They can observe something. It is something observable. But observable means what manifests. But why it manifests, that they can't say. They can just say, okay, the proton goes around like this, and the neutron goes around like that. Why? That they can't say. Never can say. They can say, yes, planet is there, planet is here, this one's hot, that one's cold. You know, that they can say, but they can't say why. So that's the point. Principles, they don't know. Details, they observe, they're intelligent, really smart. You know, and so they see a lot. But the principles still remain. So the whole idea is we want to be happy. Okay, so the Vedic literatures tell us how to be happy. Right? That's it. You want to be happy? This is what's going on. This is where it's at. Right? Bhishma Dev is on this bed of arrows. Okay? Why are we reading about it? Because when the Pandavas go there, he breaks down and cries. and tells him how much suffering he's going. He's been laying on this bed of arrows so long. The arrows are so sharp. Oh, this is miserable. No one else is suffering like me, right? That's why we're reading about it, isn't it? Yeah? No. We're reading about he's going there, and he is perfectly normal. You know, he could be sitting in his living room, you know, and greeting all the demigods and the Pandavas. There's no consideration here. They're lamenting, seeing his condition, but he's not acting like that. Therefore, it's in Bhagavatam. Right? If he's lamenting, then you just put it in with everything else, right? Like that. That's common. Right? I was just reading the other day. It's one quote. It says, "The book of knowledge, the chapter on knowledge is very small, but the chapter on accidents and what went wrong is very big." No. Like that. So that's common. No need for us to read about it. You know, you want to read about that, you read other books. You read the other Puranas and stuff like that. They'll give you that aspect of the story. But here we see he's receiving the demigods, he's receiving the Pandavas, he's receiving Lord Krishna himself on his bed of arrows, and everybody's perfectly satisfied, right? He doesn't have big palace, big facility. Oh, we can't, you know, do anything. No, he has nothing, right? I mean, you can offer him a few arrows if you want to. Hey, what a seat here. No, he can't. That's all he's got. So he's not doing that. Does this make some sense? Right? So we see his condition, and he's happy, because he's thinking of Krishna. He's in the association of so many devotees, great exalted Vaishnavas and sages, the demigods, everybody's come. And so now, the Pandavas have gotten their kingdom. They're thinking, I will be happy. They're not happy. So now they're suffering. They've done right. They lived their whole life according to righteousness. They waged the war based by righteousness, for the purpose of righteousness. Now they're on the throne on righteousness, still they're suffering. Right? Does that make sense? So the suffering has nothing to do with what they're in the palace or in the forest. They were actually the happiest times in their lives are when they were in the forest. When they were young, they grew up in the forest. When they were in exile, they were in the forest. That whole time, it was actually the pleasantest time. No politics, no nothing. Sit around with sages, do your sadhana, read, chant. It was nice. What annoyed them was just that Duryodhana is living in a bad way, and it's irreligious, and their business is kshatriyas is to establish religion. That's the pain. So then, they're not happy. So Bhishma Deva is pointing out, yes, that's the way it is. Right? But to get to it, first he goes with something that's with the lamentation. Right? They're in a lamenting mood. So he first starts by moving with that mood. Right? So first is you've suffered so much through the irreligion. And now but even though an ordinary person wouldn't have even lived through it, you were protected by Guru Krishna, the Vaishnavas, and religion. Right? You were protected by all this. So, therefore, and everything worked out. Now you're on the throne. Now everything's back to normal. Religion's been established. Everything's fine. Right? So then, after that, then he points out that your condition, okay, was bad. So now it's been understood. And we've moved with it. But now, look at your mother. When you were young, you were happy. Only when you were in the forest, you know, then there was this idea that religion is nothing. But your mother's been suffering the whole time. Right? When she was a widow, she has to take care of her kids in this political environment. Then, due to their activities, they do the gambling match, this, that. Now they're banished to the forest. She doesn't go. So again, she's without them. So her situation is very, very bad. Right? So that's one way. Once you catch that the person understands that you understand their position, right? like that, and you have to show it. Words aren't enough. You have to catch the right mood, the tone of voice, the examples. Then it's understood, yes. Okay, now you understand. Right? Because understanding has nothing to do with intelligence. Right? It means it's just a social, it's a social tool, let us say. Because you say, oh, you don't understand what I'm feeling. Right? You can't understand. You can feel what they're feeling. Right? Just like you don't understand what I'm tasting. No, but they want you to taste it, right? You don't go through and intellectualize it. But whatever, it sounds better. That you don't feel what I feel. Well, they're gonna say, of course, how am I gonna feel what you feel? No, but you have to make it look like they could. Right? You don't understand what I feel. Right? Because it's a term used for the men, right? Like that. You don't tell the other, you don't understand. The women feel. It's something you say to the men. You don't understand. Right? Because they're intellectual. So then you catch them on that. See, your intellectual platform is not very good. You're not understanding what I'm feeling. Right? So that's the thing. It's just a subtle element of spin doctrine. Right? The woman's got the problem. The man's fine. So then you spin it. No, it's his problem. Like that. So then here, the principle, though, works for everybody. It's just a matter of what depth you have to take it, right? Because you're dealing with a living entity, and living entities are all female, so they do react in basically the same way. You just overlay it with male or female conditioning, then it flavors it slightly different, you know? Like you get some yogurt, and you put some strawberries in one and put some blueberries in another, right? It's still velocity. But one has one flavor, one has another flavor. But the principle is still a lasi, right? So the soul is still feminine, so it still is interested in gain and safety. But one is interested in gain and safety in one way, one in another way. So Bhishmadeva then here is related to it, and after relating to it, then he shows how the mother's in even a worse situation, right? So then it takes it off your own self. Then from there, then he's going to take it into some philosophy. Right? He'll gradually take it up. But the end point will not be, so now you can be ecstatic if he's going to be pointing out that nothing works in this world anyway unless it's connected to Krishna. Right? That's the bottom line. So, the Vedic literatures tell you how to make the material world work fine. Right? How good you can get out of it, how much you can squeeze. It's like you want to squeeze something that's already been squeezed. There's a method, right? You must have seen people squeeze sugar cane, right? So there's a way. They put it through the first time, then they fold it in half, put it through the second time. They keep folding it until it's flat as it can get. And the big long piece of sugar cane is only about a foot long. Now they take it and twist it. So they get that last little bit of juice out of it, right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. Is you have to squeeze it. So there is a method. So that's what the Vedas tell you. You want to squeeze, okay, you want to do what everybody else has done a million times and you've done a million times? Get said, okay, this is how you do it. You squeeze this way. No, no, not that way. This way. Right? Then you get that last bit of juice. Right. So when we're tired of that and we wonder how come, okay, I'm squeezing it this way, that way, I'm getting nothing, right? So then the Gita says the problem is you're squeezing it for yourself. So therefore you're never going to get any happiness out of it. Right? So you squeeze it for Krishna, right? Then you're going to get something out of it. But it's not going to come directly. In the beginning, okay, I did it for Krishna, then you get something from that. But eventually, is Krishna happy? His happiness is your happiness. Does that make sense? So if Krishna's happy, then Radharani's happy. Radharani's happy, then we're happy. That's how it works. Right? Because we're expanded from the internal potency. So when the internal potency is happy, we're going to be happy. Right? But in the beginning, naturally, neophyte wants direct contact, right? I mean, that's always the way it is, right? Everything we do must be direct. Direct with Krishna, direct with Guru, direct with everything. It has to be direct, otherwise no taste, right? So therefore, it's an advanced aspect of the philosophy that, yes, serving Krishna directly, but the happiness is going to come through. The only reason we serve Krishna is because it pleases Radharani. When she's happy, then we become happy. Does that make some sense? So that's what's going on. So that principle is that someone else being happy will be happy. That's how it's going to work. So he's going to show how it doesn't. So the Gita shows you now, okay, now you make this bridge. You do all the squeezing you want for Krishna. Right? You have attachment to so many kinds of squeezing. Do it for Krishna. You do it for Krishna, he's happy, then you'll be happy. Right? That's how it works. And so then the Bhagavatam then shows that, because there is only the theory, right? We see in the beginning Arjuna coming, there's some moving of chariot, there's some dropping of bow, there's some standing of hair on end, the rest of it's all talk. Right? You understand? Where is it applied? Here it's applied, right here. Here are Kshatriyas discussing politics. Right? But in relationship to Krishna. Does that make sense? Then it's going to go on. Then you're going to get sages. You're going to get Vidura. His anxieties in trying to get out of the material world or how to do his service. So you're going to see everything. You see Uttara. She's got a child in her womb. And she's protecting it to please Krishna. She's coming to Krishna. Right? It's not because it's her kid, therefore it's special. No. This is the devotee's kid, and this kid is supposed to serve Krishna. So it's a devotee of Krishna, so then it's up to Krishna. You want to protect or not. Does that make sense? In other words, what you go through day to day in your life is right here in the Bhagavatam. Right here. And as it goes, it takes you farther and farther and farther. So in the beginning, here, we're saying, you know, the whole thing is nishkam, but it may be presented on the neophyte platform. You know, that there's so much social and material needs. Then we see as it goes, and it starts getting lighter and lighter. Right? Until we get to the 10th canto, where then it's just only for Krishna's pleasure. Does that make sense? So Gita is describing naishkarmya, and here we see how it's done. Right? It's how it's being done. Like we see Kardama Muni and his wife Devahuti. Devahuti's feeling bad. Why is she feeling bad? Because she is not looking good. She's a princess. She's the granddaughter of Lord Brahma. Right? So you've got to be pretty pious. Piety makes beauty. So we can understand she must be pretty beautiful. Right? But she has been for years just serving her husband, neglecting herself, not worrying, her hair is all entangled, there's dirt all over her body, her clothes are rags and that. So now, you know, it's been understood that their austerity, their detachment, their maturity in devotional service to the point where now they can properly have children as grihasthas. So she's feeling bad that she doesn't look nice to attract the husband. Right? Now one would think, oh, she's a devotee. Why would she want to be attracting her husband? Point is, if the husband's not attracted to the wife, then he's not enthusiastic. He's not enthusiastic, you don't get a boy. Right? So she's worried that they won't have a son. Because in the Vedic culture, you know, for those following the Karmakanda, then you have to have a son. Right? If you're not following Karmakanda, don't worry about it. But they have to. So it's a Vedic tradition, you have to have a son, because the son performs the Shravarai. So then your debts to the forefathers are fulfilled. So they have to have a son, and it should be the son's first, because then he'll take care of all the other kids. One, the father can retire, the mother will be protected, the younger children will be taken care of, because the daughter will go away. So the first should be a son. Right? So she's worried about that. So therefore, then in that anxiety, then Kardama understands that by his mystic potency, arranges that she goes into the, takes a bath in the water, and all these 1,000 beautiful, water nymphs like that, then they dress her and ornament her, bathe her and fix her hair and make her very nice. So her only point in wanting to do that is that that's part of her duty. It's not that she's worried about herself. Right? So even though it's dealing in seemingly the grossest aspect of material life, right, conceiving children, still it's being done from the platform of detachment, naishkarmi. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Here is reality. Here is the practicalness. You can't get more practical than that. I don't think Covey or anybody else talks about how to have a kid. I don't think so. You have to get all kinds of funky, grungy books to talk about that. Right? But you want to know how to do it in connection with Krishna. Here it is. So that's the point. There's nothing in your life that's not in these pages here. If you say there's not, it means you haven't studied. You haven't contemplated. Right? Because the principle is there. Gita gives the principle. That works for anything in anybody's life. And the Bhagavatam gives the perfect example of it that fits in everybody's life. That makes sense. You have from the poorest people up to the wealthiest people, from the smallest, humblest position up to the topmost position. We have from Brahma on down. We have examples from all places in the universe. We have kings, we have women, we have Brahmins, we have common, we have everybody. So everything's here. So then now Bhishma is just establishing that point. And we see here, this is one of the first stories. So immediately it opens up. I mean, the Bhagavatam basically opens up the first main story after it's getting is Uttara coming running to Krishna and says, save the child in my womb. That's where it starts. Right. And then each story unfolds one after another. So we can see from here is the philosophy is perfectly applied. Right? That is acharya. So everybody here in this work, they are acharyas. The comments are by acharyas. Sukadeva is acharya. Suta Goswami is acharya. Parikshit Maharaj is acharya. Right? So therefore, they are showing us perfectly how the Vedic literatures can be applied in their life. That's how it works. We have to have this faith. If you don't have this faith, it will, it will have an adverse effect on your spiritual advancement. Right? Because your spiritual advancement is based on faith. Right? Does that make sense? We can say, but so many things have happened to me that have shaken my faith. Okay, how long has your faith been shaken? How long have you been around? Anyone here can say they've been here more than, movement started in 65. Okay, we're coming up. So anyone can say that their faith has been shaken in Krishna consciousness more than 34 and a half years? Raise your hand. Unless, of course, someone here is that first disciple of Prabhupada's and Jhansi, then it's more, yes, then we'll accept. It's more than 34 and a half years. No? Yes? No. Okay. So then, 34 and a half years. Okay. How long have we been in the material world? Right? So, why did we join? Because we had full, unflinching faith in the material energy? No, we had no faith. So, if we have no faith in 10, 20, 30 years in Krishna consciousness, how is it suddenly now the material world has become so nice and wonderful and perfect again? What is the alternative? There isn't one. That's the point. We join for lack of faith, and we leave for lack of faith. But the point is how do you compare a few years to being here since time immemorial? We've been through every species of life. We've done anything and everything that goes on here. Right? There isn't nothing that we haven't done. Right? So never think, oh, I've never done that, or who the hell, how can they do that? No. You've done it yourself. Right? So they've gone through, they tried everything, did everything, every species of life, every aspect you can squeeze out of every species of life. Right? And then we've come to the conclusion there's some problem here. Right? There's some problem. So then we take up, we are then open to the idea of Krishna consciousness. Then we allow the agyata sukriti to increase until it develops faith. And when faith is there, then we take up the process. You add more faith. By having faith, you get more faith, so then you take up association of devotees. By being the association of devotees, your faith increases again, therefore that takes you to Bhajana Kriya. From following the rules and regulations, that increases your faith more, then you take up Anartha Nivriti. Having the Anarthas go, then it increases your faith more, then you become fixed. When you're fixed, you say, hey, this is great. Your faith is more, you get a taste. When the taste is more, your faith increases, then you get attachment. Attachment more, then you get bhava, bhava, and prema. It's all based on faith. You don't have faith, you're not getting anywhere. You're not going to get anywhere with your intellect. You're not going to get anywhere with your senses. You're definitely not with your senses. You're not going to get anywhere with your emotions. Because unless you have the right perfect situation with the right perfect person at the right perfect time, only then you can taste that emotion. Right? How many times you've thought, okay, we'll do this and that, and it'll be like this and that, and we'll have this and that experience, and then when it happens, it doesn't happen. Right? So that's the point. It's you can't guarantee anything. So whatever it is, you connect it to Krishna, you'll be satisfied. Because the thing itself, there's nothing here that will actually ever make you happy. Nothing. Right? It's this doing it for Krishna that makes you happy. Even you're doing a service you like, it's not the service that's making you happy. It's that it's being done to please Krishna that makes you happy. You're doing a service you like means it matches your conditioned nature. Unless it's chanting, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, or living the Dham. Right? Outside of that, then you know, you like to do this service for Krishna, that service for Krishna, manage for Krishna, or make money for Krishna, or, you know, whatever it is, those things, we do it because it matches our conditioned nature. So, doing it's not what makes us happy. No, it's that it's being done to please Krishna. Otherwise, people are managing all over the world. People are, you know, doing all kinds of things all over the world. They're not becoming happy. Right? Temporarily, okay. The book gets a top rave, yeah, they're happy. You know? And then if they don't write again, who's ever heard of them? You know, J.K. Roll who? You know, so who ever heard of them? Right? When the guy grows up, she's history. Right? So it's like that. You know, how does it work? You understand? So, but doing it for Krishna, that's what's nice. So, there has to be a medium. Right? That's the point. There's a medium. So you take the conditioned situation, use that for Krishna. You don't have faith, you don't have affection for Krishna, you won't get the happiness. It just doesn't come. Right? Then, because we have to be happy, then we'll look somewhere else and try to find something else. Like that, because we're desperate, we have to have. So then we'll kind of look at the thing before that drove us nuts, then we'll look at it, oh, well, it's not so bad after all, you know. Living with your family, they're driving you nuts, right? You left the house when you were 15. like that. Then you moved around, you bumped into the devotees, grow up, and then, you know, when you're 30, 40, then suddenly now the family is not so bad after all. You know, they're still eating the same chicken, they're still doing this, drinking the same nonsense, doing the same, everything's the same. And somehow or another, now they're not so bad. That's because the mind is desperate to find shelter. This brings up a side point, is that therefore one can find something good in anything. So you should attempt to find that in devotees, in the association of devotees and devotional service. Even though everything seems to be bad, there's always something good. Because if you can still find some good in the material world, that takes a lot more work than finding it in Krishna consciousness. So, you know, why work so hard, right? You could be happy much easier. Make any sense? So that's the whole point. So ultimately, then we'll see is the faith is the main thing, and then at the end of the story, the Pandavas will just go back to Godhead. Right? They've done their duties, and now it's time to, you know, go. Thank you. Check out. Any questions or comments?
This faith, then, is that an act of emotions, or is it intellectual? Or what?
Is the faith an act of emotions or intellectual? Actually, it's both. If you want it to be solid, it has to be both. See, because you have two elements that are running for the condition. So you have tattva and you have rasa. So you have to understand it, because in the beginning we won't have the faith. So intellectually we study it. But then after studying it, then it has... the mind accepts it. When it accepts it, that's when it's emotion. So emotion based upon intelligence, that's solid. Does that make some sense? Unless it goes through the prema, then you don't have to worry about the intellectual platform, right? The gopis didn't bother, right? They just heard Krishna's flute or saw him or heard about him. That was it. Their emotions went there. So that's the first recommendation. If you can do that, great. If you find you haven't done that, then sadhana bhakti. So that means using the intelligence and then endeavoring. And by that practice, then the mind will come to value it. And then when the mind values it, then you know it's solid. Right? If it's just intellectual, then you can juggle things. You can find some fault, seeming fault. If it's only emotional, emotions change. So it's like this. It's the same principle, masculine feminine principle. Feminine is stable when it's connected to masculine, right? So the intelligence is the male principle. The mind is the female principle. So the female principle is controlled by the intelligence. It's peaceful, and it has direction and meaning. When the intelligence is controlled by the mind, it's not peaceful, right? Women are always trying to get control of the man, but if they ever do it, they're not satisfied. The man that they can't get that control of, that's the situation which they're satisfied. That's the way it works. Because the energy can never get on top of the energetic. It seems that they are, but at the same time, he is free. He does walk away from the rasa dance. Right? Name the man in the universe who's going to walk away from, you know, 16,000 or 16 million of the most beautiful women in the creation. Forget the material world. Forget the earth. Right? It says in the, what is it? Sukadeva Goswami is talking about the beauty of the gopis and then the heavenly planets, and then he says about the women here that they call beautiful. You understand? He doesn't say they're beautiful. He says they call them beautiful. Because that's what we know here. So their beauty's way beyond. I mean, it's like, what was that guy? Shantasura? Both Dravida, Dvidvida, and Shankachuda. they came in contact and saw the gopis, they flipped. They just immediately came and grabbed some to take home. Right? You know, they were, you know, it's like, wow, you know. So that's the point. And Krishna's there, and they're willing to take away girls that, you know, don't want to have anything to do with them. You know, they'll work that out later, okay? You know, but here you have, you know, millions of girls who are the most beautiful, and they're not 50% surrendered like in a marriage. They're 100% surrendered. Right? And their only idea is to please Krishna. Krishna walks away. Therefore, there's not a moment when the gopis and every living entity, you know, is not impressed by Krishna. Right? So even though they're always trying to control him, Mother Yashoda is telling him when to eat, take a bath, go to bed, get up, but still, she can never completely. The gopis also, never completely. The friends also, but never completely. So it doesn't. Or the servants, even by their serving mood, that you'll be indebted and therefore you control through that. You know, that's the meaning. Like in the marriage ceremony, one of the mantras that the father tells the wife, the bride, is, you know, be the master of my parents, be the master of the mother, of the father, of the brothers, of the, like that. But it means by the good qualities and that the character and the service and then, the piety, that you'll completely control them. They'll come under your control because of your good character. That's how you control the boy's father and mother and sisters and brothers. Like that. So that's not known. Therefore, you always have the stories about the mother-in-law. Right? So this is the principle. So even servants have the idea I'm controlling because of my service. But Krishna is in another category. He's still independent. Therefore, everybody is attracted to him at all times, all places, eternally. So that's the principle. So that principle applies from the top, from Golok Vrindavan, from Vrindavan to Mathura to Dwarka to Vaikuntha to Brahmaloka to the heavenly planets, to the earthly planet, to the hellish planets. It's still the same. Does that make sense? That principle is an eternal principle that goes throughout everything. So therefore, the intelligence must control the mind. Otherwise, the mind can never be satisfied. Can never be satisfied. That's why also in the Vedas it says, knowledge goes in first, then arts. You have to create a logical foundation for the intelligence. Then within that, you can put arts to refine it, develop it. Right? If you put in arts first, then the mind is in control. And then you, because art is your value, therefore then your intelligence is used for the art. But it should be within the field of intelligence. There's a science of art. Therefore then, I do. Right? Does that make sense? Like today, you have crazy painting. Right? They'll call it a Picasso. Right? People spend hundreds of millions for it. Why? Because he paints from the science and then goes into the art of the mind. Understand? And there's millions of people that copy his style. No one's buying them. Because they're starting from the mind and then using their brain how to do it. Oh, okay, we could ride a bicycle over it, or let's let the dog run through it, or I'll roll around in it, or I'll eat my lunch on top of it, or anything like that. But that's art, and then you're using your intelligence to think of different ways. No, he's using his intelligence. Okay, this is the concept, this is everything. Then I will use my mind to express that. So that's why there's a difference. So there's, why is one paying for than the other? Who cares? His intelligence is being used, and then the art then fits within that. That's different. So that's the Vedic. That's why it's higher. That's why it's more fine. Vedic architecture, Vedic music, there's a science. Then you use the mind on that to create newer and newer improvisations and expansions. expansions and developments. But it has a foundation because of the masculine principle of the intelligence. Right? Does that make sense? When the man is there, then the women and all that, then they dress nice, they do this, they do that, socially, they interact so nicely. It works. But that shelter is there. It's not there, it doesn't work. So that's the idea. So both have to be there. It can't be that just it's only intellectual. Because what's the meaning of the masculine principle about the feminine? And what's the meaning of the feminine about the masculine? Does that make sense? So it means you can't just have intellect, otherwise then you have the armchair speculators. Right? And then if not, then you have the sentimentalists. Right? The moralists. Like that. So these are the two. You see, our acharyas always kick out these two people before they get down to the body of the work. Always in the invocation, they always kick out these people. The moralists and the speculators. Always. You know? And you expand that, then it's, you know, like that. It's your control and your attachment. These are the two primordial sins. So those are just two manifestations of it, prominent manifestations. So you have to have both. That's the balance. Like that. Does that make some sense? So that's the point, is that philosophy, you know, is successful when you see it. When you hear about it, that's the first stage. When you contemplate it, that's the next stage. But when you see it in your day-to-day life, then the philosophy is hit ground. Then you can say there's some proper development here. Does that make sense? So that's okay.
Just in the life of the devotee, there may be a tendency to get the realities of the school of hard knocks.
Yes.
And can we find that it's an adherent enchantment that keeps our mind sharp until we have to go back and experience it again? But simply by that hearing process, then we can avoid.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Maharaj is making the point that it's not that one has to go back. One may become lax in devotional service. Not that one has to go back to the material world, to the school of hard knocks. That to experience and understand. But by hearing and chanting, then one can keep the intelligence and one's understanding properly developed. Yeah, because hearing is the best method. By hearing, and you understand and you can apply it, that's considered first class intelligence. Second class is you have to see it. Hear and see. Third is you have to do it. You know? So then this idea, you know, the other thing of, only the Grihastha understands what's going through. That's called third class intelligence. That statement is being stated by a third class man. Because first class can also, Sukadeva Goswami fully understands what Grihastha life is. He's explaining it like that. He's not married. Right? Because it's first class. So hearing is a very viable thing. And Krishna Prabhupada has made the society so nicely that without having to experience so many things ourselves, we can see it in others because the whole community is so close. So we can hear and see very nicely. So it's not that we have to do everything. So in the same way as even you want to check the material world, how much you can do. Because otherwise, then this was a problem. Then the next thing, oh, that was a problem. Then we change, give up that. Oh, that was a problem. Right? I mean, that's just like, what is it? Famous race car driver named Senna from South America. He commented, I think it was Monte Carlo. He says, only big accidents happen here. Nothing small. Other tracks have small accidents because the track goes and then there's open space. You spin off, you go off the track. And in Monte Carlo, you don't. You went into the wall because that's the shop, right? They go through the streets. So he stated that before the race. he had a car accident and died in that rage. Right? So, you know, okay, so that one didn't work. You can try the next one, try the next one. Sometimes you can do a few in a lifetime. Sometimes you have to try a few lifetimes. So it just, it goes. So the point is by hearing, we already know, we have enough understanding. It's said that by squeezing one grain of rice, you can understand the whole pot. It's cooked or uncooked. So in the same way as what experience we've had, or by hearing, you know, it can be done. Second generation also, they can't make the excuse that, no, I didn't do it, so I don't know, you first generation did, so you know. No, the only reason they were born in devotee families is they did it all the previous life. They've already done it. You're only born in the devotee family if you're a devotee. That means, and you're only a devotee if you've already done it. You know what I'm saying? It's like you see someone in this life, they don't get married, because they were married in previous life. So they've already done it, and they've seen, okay, and therefore this life, they're not. They don't have to worry about it. So it's been done. So we've done it, so there's no need. And if you have a doubt, you know, buy a newspaper. You read about how nicely it's happening, what's going on, you know? Like that, you know, see how great it is, you know. I remember once one relative was telling that in the Midwest there was one gentleman, you know, very nice gentleman, wealthy gentleman. He got sick and tired of newspapers that only had bad news. So he started a newspaper that only had good news in it. He folded after some weeks or months. No one wanted to buy it. They only wanted the newspaper was bad news. Like that. So you want to know it's there. Or talk to friends. Maybe just think of yourself, you know, what's going on. The conditioned nature. It's not that the conditioned nature is, it's the problem, it's the devotees. It's, no, it's the situation. This devotee's harassing. No, it's harassment that's a problem. It's not the devotee. Harassment happens everywhere. Right? It's everywhere is harassment. So if you take, you know, person A and they harass person B will feel uncomfortable. Right? So like that, it's the way it works. So it doesn't matter, A and B can be devotees, A can be a devotee, B can be not a devotee. You know, it's not that the people in the airport when the devotees are harassing them doing the chain up, that they were happy also. You know, so it goes both ways. Right? And then because they're unhappy, then they go to the authorities, and then they close the airport to the devotees, and the devotees are unhappy. Right? So it's just if one harasses another, then there's unhappiness. And that's just the way it goes. So therefore, hearing and chanting is the best way. The chanting will purify the heart and give us the real intelligence, purify the mind that we're able to actually appreciate the finer qualities. You know, the finer aspects, the devotional aspects. And then the hearing, then we hear what's transcendental, we know where we're going, and then we also hear where we've come from. So that's the point, is that we can forget where we've come from as long as we have no interest in it. But if there's interest in it, then we should remember. You know, it wasn't what was there. Because the mind will do a particular trick on us. Right? The mind, it accepts and rejects. That's its function. That's all it does. It doesn't do a third thing. So we had a bad experience. So then the experience itself, the badness of the experience, not necessarily the situation, is what will be remembered. The situation will be connected to it because it was in the environment, right? So then with time, we'll forget the experience, right? Because it's material. We'll remember the situation. The situation was not necessarily bad. Then we'll start looking at it, well, it wasn't so bad after all. And then we'll look at those elements that were nice about it. Though at the time, the elements that were not nice were greater than the ones that were nice. But we'll forget the ones that are not bad and just remember, retain what's good. Right? So one may ask, well, why would that happen? That's because the soul is ananda. Right? It's not misery. If it was the soul is made of misery, then we'd remember everything like that, miserable. I don't know. Maybe the, you know, those souls from a Jewish background are, you know, are slightly differently constituted. But whatever. The general principle is that they're made out of ananda. So we only remember what's good. Does that make sense? We only remember what's good. So that means with time we will forget the bad. It's just automatic. But the good will remember. Because that's all we can actually relate. We can't relate to bad. That's why we want to get out of the situation. We can't relate to it. The good we relate to. That's why we want to be in it. So with time we'll even forget what we can't relate to, and we'll only retain what we can relate to, even in bad situations. Right? The guys at the war are sitting around and just waiting for the day they'll tell them they get their letter, they can go home. Right? But once they're home, and then after so many years, then they're sitting around talking about, yeah, you know, we were there, that, you know, we dropped us in, and it was tough, and the bombs were going over, and all the little kids are going, wow, man. Like this. So, you know, they're remembering all that, and it was great, and the camaraderie, and the, you know, what they were doing, and the good, and, you know, all these different things like that. They forget about everything else. If they were, you know, sitting there wet in their pants, if they weren't going to get blown out of the sky as they drop out of the airplane, right? So it's... So Maharaj's point is, don't make the mistake. You got to go back to the material world to figure out what it is. Right? You know, just hearing and chanting will get you through. Right? Yes.
But if you analyze all the movies, it's like 1% where they're happy, and the rest of you is how they're miserable. They're getting slashed up, and they're getting, you know, they're all miserable, and that's what we're attracted to.
No, but the main point is just slashing up the people that are making them miserable. That's the main thing. See, is that the point is that there must be that one glimmer of hope. Right? So you'll notice that there'll be the last 30 seconds will have something in it. Maybe there'll be 2 seconds here, 3 seconds there, but that will be summarized in the last even 15 seconds. But that's enough for the jiva, because the jiva can relate to happiness. So immediately they'll take that, and then it's good. But as you say, it's mostly not good. Anything's like that. You take anything. You know, it's like how much you have to, you know, it's like you say you want to dress up. How much time you take going out, buying the stuff, getting all the things, the accessories, matching everything, getting it washed, you know, getting it just the way you want it, putting it on just the way you want it. How many people, for how long, tell you how great you look? Right? Most don't even notice. A few notice and go, hey, that's nice. Where did you get that? Okay, how many seconds was that? You know? Okay, that was 3 seconds, right? So, okay, and then 3 people, okay, so that's 9 seconds. Great, but how much time did you spend for it, right? It's always like that. So, everything we do that we want to be happy, it's the distress that you have to go through is so much greater than the happiness, right? Because you're dealing with material energy, which is feminine, then the proportion is guaranteed 9 to 1. You should always remember this formula, 9 to 1. If you remember that, you will not be frustrated. If you think it's going to be 1 to 1, you're in for a rude shock. 9 to 1 is the magic formula. Yes.
Just a point on the fight, there is always possibility of having a clear effect on losing weight as long as we stay on the second platform.
Yes.
And there is a story in the Vedas where there was some Brahmins, there was a story which illustrates how the Ashwadha or lack of fight was born. So there was those Brahmins.
I'm going to tell everybody here. trying to hear a story.
So there was this Brahmins performing Sankarmakanda sacrifice. Sankarmakanda sacrifice, you have the fruit which you want again, so it's very important for you. So they were performing that sacrifice, and also when you do some mistake in the Kandakama sacrifice, then you don't get the result you were expecting. So those Brahmins were performing some sacrifice, and there's a part when you slide the enemy of the sacrifice, so there's that special knife, and you strike in the northern direction, and that's the ritual which is meant for that. And after that, since it's a blood and it's a dirty thing, then you're supposed to purify your hands. So those Brahmins were doing that sacrifice, and it was a very elaborate sacrifice, and they forgot to do a little thing. And then the sacrifice was useless, they didn't get any result, and then they all became faithless, they became atheists after that. So in the same way, we sometimes see that when we come and we have some expectation, we want something from a spiritual life, and also when we don't get our getting the desire, and then people tend to become faithless, they lose their faith.
So that principle is that if we're doing things to please Krishna, we'll never be disappointed. Like Yudhishthira Maharaj. They were in the forest. Yudhishthira was not disappointed. Draupadi was, you know, she really was. Bhima really was. Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadeva were not, you know, overly satisfied. But he was... And Draupadi made the point, hey, you know, you're religious, you got a bad result. Duryodhana is irreligious, he's sitting on the throne. What's going on? So Yudhishthira made the point. It says, I've never done anything for the purpose of getting the result. You know, that I'm going to get the result. I'm doing it because I'm supposed to do it. Right? And by me doing it, I please the Lord. So that's the result I'm looking for. It's his pleasure. So if that's there, then it doesn't matter what happens. One will always be protected. That's the point being made. If one follows it very nicely, here it says. As long as a person is fully in cooperation with the wishes of the Lord, guided by the bona fide Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and strictly following the religious principles, one has no cause for despondency, however trying the circumstances of life. Right? You have no cause for despondency because everything will work. But it says no matter how trying. It doesn't say everything's going to be perfect. Right? That's the point. Like the Karmakanda will say, you do this, you'll be happy. Why you're happy? Because actually you're supposed to do Karmakanda to please the Lord. If the Lord's pleased, you'll be happy. But we interpret it, I do this, I will get the result of material happiness. Right? The Lord's left out of it. But nowhere does it say that there's not a problem in the material world. That's just the way it works. So if those three are there, one will be protected. One will always be happy. Because happiness is based on satisfaction. Happiness itself is not happiness. Right? Happiness is something temporary. The word happiness means temporary. Excuse me. Because happiness means you fulfill the desire. When that moment the desire is fulfilled, that moment you experience in the present. So in other words, what we're saying is living in the presence actually is the source of happiness. Because I will get that, then I'm not happy. When I get it, that moment, I'm happy. That moment is in the present. That moment, after that moment, moves into the past. The happiness disappears. Right? What we're left with is the elation. Right? That goes for a little while. Because it's an emotional experience. It'll go for some time before it runs out. Right? Why would it run out? It means because we're not actually still happy. Right? If we were still happy, why the elation wouldn't go on? But it dies because there's nothing to nourish it. That makes sense? So happiness means that moment that you get what you're looking for. But satisfaction means I'm also, by situating myself in goodness, so I'm in the present, that what I have, I'm happy with. Does that make sense? So then you're always in the present, so you're always happy. You're not hankering for something in the future. You're not lamenting for something in the past. So that's the advantage of the mode of goodness. From there, then it's very easy to try to do it for Krishna. You can use the passion of ignorance also for Krishna, but it's a little rough. You know, it's a rough ride. You like roller coasters? Go for it. You know, if you're one of those guys that stayed off the roller coasters, try the mode of goodness. It's a little more of a smooth ride. You know, there's still the little dips, but not as much, you know. Chilly, so we thought we would add to the global warming and try to create a better atmosphere. Srila Prabhupada ki, Salavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitya Govinda ki.
Salavita Bhaktivinoda ki.